In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The term apocalyptic death cult. That sounds scary. It does. It sounds like the thing of science fiction or some dystopic film about a future where the world is falling apart. Apocalyptic death cult. But that's exactly how our guest for this remaining half hour of Issues Etc. describes ISIS, the Islamic State. Well, it calls itself a state. It says it's true Islam. It even says, and this is very significant, that it is the true caliphate of Islam in the world today. What does that mean? Well, we're going to find out in the course of our conversation as we talk about the worldview of the Islamic State with Robert Spencer, a regular guest. He's director of Jihad Watch, and he's author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS. Robert, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Todd, always good to be here. Thank you.
There's a term that you use, and I want it to kind of kick off our conversation on the internal motivations of ISIS. There's a term you use, which is apocalyptic death cult. What do you mean by that? Why does that apply to ISIS?
Well, in the first place, they constantly reiterate that they love death, that they say, we will win because we love death more than you love life. And so in the first place, so they're setting themselves up as the primeval foes of all those who love life and all those who love creation, because they love death and they love destruction. And the apocalyptic part is quite direct. It's not at all metaphorical in the sense that they hope to provoke Armageddon, the final struggle between the forces of good and the forces of evil, in which they say they're the forces of good, but I don't believe that's quite true. And they intend to bring about that battle at a town in northern Syria called Dabiq, where the Islamic prophecies say that the final battle will come. And they think that this is going to happen after they conquer Rome and Europe and then Israel by 2022. And then the Americans will come meet them at Dabiq, and that will be the last Armageddon battle.
So there's an eschatology. There's a judgment day, doomsday scenario that is very close to the heart of the Islamic State's worldview.
Yes, and it's based on ancient hadith traditions of Muhammad, in which he prophesied that there will be this titanic battle at Dabiq, and that the forces arrayed against the Muslims will all gather together there, and the Muslims will gather there, and there'll be the last battle. And the thing about the Islamic State is that, unlike other Muslims throughout history, they think they're going to bring this about within the next 10 years.
Okay, so when someone says it's not Islamic, the Islamic State is a perversion, they have co-opted the name of Islam, let's talk about that in terms of the stated theology of the Islamic State.
The thing about it is, Todd, that there isn't a single thing that anybody could honestly point to and say, the Islamic State does this and it's absolutely forbidden in Islam. In fact, the Islamic State very scrupulously does everything based on Islamic texts and teaching. Just today, as a matter of fact, they burned alive for Shiite soldiers. And people say, well, see, there's a clear example, because Muhammad said, don't punish with burning. The fire is Allah's punishment. And Muhammad is quoted as saying that in the Hadith. The problem is that the Quran also says that if somebody does wrong to you, you do wrong to them in exactly the same way. And so that's one thing, that you should do unto others what they did unto you. And Muhammad also burned people with fire on occasion, which kind of undercuts his telling people not to do it, since he is the supreme example of conduct. So the Islamic State, they see that these people, the Shiites, or the earlier, the Jordanian pilot who they burned to death, they say these people have dropped incendiary bombs and have set fires on in our territory, and thus we are not only allowed, but obligated to burn them to death so that we punish them in the same way that they punished us.
So let's what's the history that is that the Islamic State is drawing upon, or their version of history that they're drawing upon to get them to the point where they're at now, Robert?
The main part about the history is the idea of the caliphate. The caliph, or khilafa, is the word means successor. And the caliph is the successor of Muhammad as the military, political, and spiritual leader of the Muslims worldwide. There has not been a caliph since 1924 when the secular Turkish government abolished the caliphate. But the jihad groups around the world, Al-Qaeda and even the Muslim Brotherhood and so on, they have all been dedicated as part of their foundational goals to reestablish the caliphate. But only the Islamic State has actually dared to do it and been able to sustain it. And that is the big push, the big appeal that they have among Muslims worldwide, that they claim to be the reconstitution of the caliphate. The caliphate is the only government in Islamic theology, the only government to which Muslims owe any allegiance at all. And this appeal has proven to be very attractive to Muslims worldwide, such that 30,000 foreign Muslims have gone from all over the world to join the caliphate in Iraq, Syria, and Libya.
Okay, can you explain that concept to us in some detail, what the caliphate has been and what it is in the hands of ISIS now?
Absolutely. See, Muhammad died without having named a successor, and so his followers got together and they chose who they considered to be the best man in the community to be the successor of Muhammad. And as time went by, the caliphate, the successorship, became the basis of the Islamic empires. The caliph was kind of the emperor of Islam, the leader of the entire Muslim world. Now, this was never wholly true because there was always dissent. There were always rival claimants. There were always fighting over who was rightfully the caliph and so on. But there were great Islamic empires. The great Islamic empires in the past were all caliphates. The Umayyad Caliphate, the Abbasid Caliphate, the Ottoman Caliphate are the main three. And then there were other smaller ones. But always the Muslims were ruled by this idea. Now, this changed in 1924 when the Turkish government, after the fall of the Ottoman Empire, was kind of unprecedented in Islamic history in blaming Islam for the troubles that had befallen Turkey. And the Turkish government abolished the caliphate, which made the hardline Muslims around the world believe that now the Muslims were deprived of their legitimate government, which was the foundation of their unity and power. And the Muslim Brotherhood was founded just 4 years after the abolition of the caliphate in 1924 in order to restore the caliphate. And the Muslim Brotherhood tried very hard to get into position to do that in 2012 when they took power in Egypt, but they blew it and were toppled from power. And then their thunder was stolen from them entirely when this upstart group, an offshoot of Al-Qaeda, declared a caliphate in Iraq and completely undercut their claim, their hopes, rather, to establish a caliphate in North Africa.
Now, this is rather important, I think, that ISIS is not just claiming to be a caliphate, but to be the caliphate. What does that mean?
Oh, absolutely. Well, they're claiming to be the only legitimate government of Muslims worldwide. And so, see, you know, so much of analysis, even at the highest level in the United States today, is superficial and based on false or incomplete information. And I hear constantly all the time, well, ISIS is not Islamic because they kill Muslims. Of course they kill Muslims, and they kill Muslims who they consider to be heretics and apostates for the crime of rejecting their authority, because they consider themselves to be the only authority to which Muslims owe allegiance. And so it's all because they have claimed to be the caliphate that they kill other Muslims, and they consider it to be not only their right but their responsibility to do so.
So that's Islamic State's view of the caliphate vis-a-vis other Muslims. What is its view in detail of the caliphate in view of the non-Muslim world?
Well, the dangerous part of the concept of the caliphate for non-Muslims is that the caliph is the only one who is authorized, according to Sunni Islam, and Sunni Islam is 85 to 90% of Muslims worldwide, the caliph is the only person authorized to declare offensive jihad. It might seem unbelievable, Todd, but all the jihad that we've seen in the world over the last 20, 30, 40 years has been classified under Islamic theology as defensive. And that is because when a Muslim land is attacked, it becomes the responsibility of all Muslims worldwide to fight to defend the Islamic world, the Islamic community. And so even 9/11, when you look at Osama bin Laden justifying it, and the other plotters justifying it, they justify it by listing a whole bunch of grievances that they claim, all these terrible things that the U.S. and Israel and so on have done to them. And they say this was just retaliation for that. But that's as bad as it is. It will get even worse with a caliphate established, because the caliph has, again, not just the right, but the responsibility to declare jihad with no provocations at all, with no long list of grievances, against non-Muslim entities on a regular basis. And so we think that it's been bad so far. The problem of terrorism could exponentially increase because of the reestablishment of the caliphate.
What is the appeal? We talk about an appeal of to Westerners. I heard this weekend just of two young men from a Somali community that is based around the Twin Cities in the United States who were, I believe they were detained or arrested because they were planning to travel to join ISIS in some form or another. They're drawn by this idea. What is the appeal there, Robert?
Well, there it is. It's the caliphate. You want to go live in the perfect Islamic society, in the true Islamic society, where Islamic law is fully implemented and where Islam is the acknowledged law, and there's nothing else there but Islam. And so you're a Muslim and you think this is pure Islam, this is true Islam. There's the caliph, and that's where I should be.
How does the rest of, because we're talking here about a although very powerful, very, very vocal, I want to get to that in a minute here, group here, but the rest of the Islamic world, how do they view ISIS?
Well, with certain varying degrees of horror for various reasons. They split from Al-Qaeda, and so Al-Qaeda thinks of the Islamic State as a competitor, and so does the Muslim Brotherhood, because the Muslim Brotherhood, as I said, had wanted to establish the caliphate in Egypt and North Africa and failed. And but the caliphate is still one of their primary goals. And so they both view the Islamic State as a group that stole their thunder and is their principal competition. That also, here again, it has a great impact on how we understand things in the West. For example, all the major Muslim groups in the United States have condemned ISIS. And so a lot of people think, see, there is Islamic moderation. All these groups have condemned ISIS. But the fact is that all of the significant Muslim groups in the United States, without exception, are linked to the Muslim Brotherhood. And so, of course, they despise and condemn the Islamic State. They don't reject the concept of the caliphate at all. They just want it to be their own caliphate.
Robert Spencer is our guest. He's director of Jihad Watch. We're talking about the worldview of ISIS, the Islamic State. When we come back, they are now infamous for their use of internet propaganda. We're not talking about a bunch of 6th century Luddites here. We're talking about people who are extremely sophisticated, although also very gruesome in their use of propaganda and in their use of recruiting through the internet and through the gruesome images of beheading and such. We'll find out how that works right after this.
You might wonder, is it possible for my child with special needs to receive a rich classical Christian education? Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope answers yes. With the Simply Classical curriculum created by Cheryl and published by Memoria Press, there's no reason to withhold a beautiful education from any struggling student. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Issues Etc. regular guest Craig Parton will present Christianity for the Academic and the Artist as part of the Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture. Join us on Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in suburban St. Louis. To learn more, go to villagelectures.com. Christianity for the Academic and the Artist, Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m., Village Lutheran, St. Louis.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. the 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We're talking about the worldview of the Islamic State of ISIS. Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. On the subject of worldviews, Pastor Jonathan Fisk made the case for the church's response to postmodernism, one of the most pervasive and erosive worldviews in the Western world at this time. He made it to the 2015 Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference. Now, if you were unable to attend the conference, we'd be happy to send you an audio DVD of the entire conference audio for a donation of $300 before Labor Day. This audio DVD contains more than 8 hours of teaching, singing, and preaching. You can make your $300 check payable to Issues, Etc. Send it to Issues, Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also order online. Click the audio DVD logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. It's an audio DVD of this summer's Issues, Etc., Making the Case conference. Robert, let's talk a little bit about ISIS and their use of internet propaganda, the videos, the recruitment that takes place through those videos. We're not talking about a bunch of Luddites here, are we?
Oh, not at all, no. A lot of people, I here again is another example of superficial analysis. I hear people saying they want to take the world back to the 7th century. No, they don't. They're perfectly happy and actually quite conversant with computers and modern cutting-edge social media technology and so on. That's no problem at all for them, and they very cannily use it to make recruits among peaceful Muslims. But the idea of what they want to do is not turn the clock back, but institute what they consider to be the law of Allah, the eternal and perfect immutable law of God. And that is something that goes back to the 7th century. But it certainly does not preclude the use of modern technology in any way, shape, or form, as long as it's used to further the cause of Islam.
So what is going on in their famous, these hideous videos of mass beheadings? What's happening there?
Well, in the first place, they hope to strike terror into the hearts of the enemies of Allah, which is a command in the Quran, chapter 8, verse 60. And they hope to also shore up their base and be attractive to Muslims worldwide. Now, you might think, now, how on earth is a beheading video going to be attractive to Muslims? Well, if they see that the Quran sanctions beheading, and as a matter of fact commands it, and says, when you meet the unbelievers, strike the necks, and then they see that a group is doing it and is unapologetic about it and is quite open about it, then they think, at last we have Islam. At last we have a group that's not afraid to stand for Islam as it is truly constituted. And so that becomes a recruiting tool for them.
That's difficult to wrap my head around, Robert. I mean, what do I need to understand about a, let's just again go to kind of the young Islamic man, enthusiastic for his religion, frustrated with the state of that religion in the West, looking at ISIS. Give me a hint as to why that looks attractive here.
It's all in the Quran. It's all the Quran, Todd. That's it from the beginning to the end, that ISIS is beheading and the Quran says to behead. ISIS is taking sex slaves. The Quran many times speaks about the captives of the right hand who are spoils of war, whom a man can have as well as his four wives. And they are allowed to him. It's specifically explained in the Quran that he can use them sexually as well as his wives. And so this is something that's in the Quran. Obviously, most Muslims today are not doing it. And here comes a group that's doing it and is proclaiming it to the world without the slightest embarrassment or apology. And so a young Muslim, devout and conversant in the Quran, and frustrated with the what he considers to be the watered-down state of the observance of Islam in all too many contexts, he sees this group and thinks, at last, somebody is really putting Islam into practice. They must really be who they say they are, the new caliphate.
So the ideal recruit in the West for ISIS is who?
A young man who is able-bodied, who is intelligent, who is well-educated, and is very devout in Islam, and is willing to relocate and to take up arms in their cause.
How successful would you say at this point in their short history they have been in that respect?
Extraordinarily successful. I mean, you look at 30,000 foreign fighters from around the world having joined ISIS. It shows that their appeal is very powerful and very attractive among Muslims.
What view, to kind of come back around to where we began, what view of the end of history is in the mind of that young man when he joins ISIS?
Well, they're going to destroy the West. They're going to conquer Rome, which is the second half of a prophecy that Muhammad is supposed to have made. Muhammad said, first you'll conquer the new Rome, and then the old Rome, the new Rome being Constantinople, which, of course, Muslims did conquer in 1453. And then you'll conquer the old Rome, and that has never happened. And so they're still waiting. And there have been many, many Muslim clerics in recent years who have said, now it's coming, the time. They see the situation in Europe. They see how Europe is changing and how Muslims are streaming into Europe. And they see how the European governments are allowing all this to happen without doing anything to stop it. And so they say, this is the time. We're going to take Rome now and finish that prophecy. And so that's part of it. And then they're going to continue. And once they defeat all the forces arrayed against the non-Muslims at Dabiq, then is going to be the end times. And that's when Jesus, the Muslim prophet, will return. And all the Christians will be either converted to Islam or killed. And that will be the consummation of all things when the world is conquered and Islamized.
We have in kind of Christian circles sometimes a golden age that the Christians think about before Judgment Day, not to stray into that territory, but is that essentially the appeal of this view of history for ISIS, that there will be an Islamic golden age?
Yes, and they are the vanguard of it, and they're going to bring it about, absolutely.
Someone listening to us says, come on. I mean, we are talking about a deep concern for us in terms of our defense, in terms of our counterterrorism, in terms of our foreign policy and all those things, but this is the flash in a pan. What do you say to that, Robert?
Well, this is already the wealthiest and most successful terror group in world history. I mean, this is a group that started out as Al-Qaeda in Iraq and then broke with Al-Qaeda and was dismissed by Obama in January 2014. This is not that long ago, as the JV team, you know, some insignificant offshoot. And by 6 months later, they had taken over so much of Syria and Iraq that they bulldozed the border and declared it non-existent, and that they were establishing a state. Al-Qaeda never established a state. Al-Qaeda never held territory. And yet now the Islamic State not only controls a territory larger than Great Britain, but it has the control of the oil wells in that territory, which bring it well over $1 billion every day. And it has gained the allegiance of other jihad groups around the world that have accepted its claim to be the caliphate, such that now the Islamic State has territory also, not just in Iraq and Syria, but in Libya, Nigeria, and elsewhere. And it's on the march, aggressively calling for attacks in the West, attacks in the United States. And when it did call for attacks against policemen and military men in the West, then there was a Muslim in Canada who ran over a couple of military men. There was an attack, stabbing attack on policemen in New York City. And it's very clear that when they issue a call, then there are Muslims who are willing to heed it and to do what they say.
A couple final questions here. In just terms of the territory that they've managed to commandeer, did we wipe the slate clean for ISIS to do what it did in Iraq?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In the first place, we oversaw the installation of a weak Shiite government in Baghdad. The Shiite government was a government we should have known that the Sunnis would never accept. And the Sunnis being a majority in Iraq, that was just asking for some group to arise that would challenge the Shiite rule and more. And then in Syria, right next door, we're arming the so-called rebels against Assad, who turn out to be a lot of the same Sunni jihadis who hate the Shiites in Iraq and hate the Shiite-sponsored regime of Assad in Syria. And so we aided and abetted and made this thing happen in any number of ways. The Defense Intelligence Agency chief, Michael Flynn, the former DIA chief, recently gave an interview in which he said that Obama knew that it was al-Qaeda and other jihad groups that we would be arming against Assad in Syria, and he went ahead anyway. And so the Islamic State is his creation.
Finally, then, talk about what we can discern of the specific timetable of ISIS for its historical goals.
Well, like I say, they hope to have conquered Europe and Israel within the next 10 years. And whether they will be able to do that or not, that's anybody's guess. I think that nobody would have predicted that they'd have been able to hold on to these huge swaths of Iraq and Syria over this past year, and nothing seems poised to topple them on the horizon now. But in any case, however far they're able to go toward those goals, they're certainly going to kill a great many people in the process of trying. The thing about it is that the Islamic State is like Nazi Germany. They're going to keep coming. They're going to keep attacking. They're going to keep advancing unless and until they are stopped. And so unless and until there is a group with the will and the means to stop them, they're going to keep coming at us.
You have written, Robert, the Islamic State is not just a challenge to Judeo-Christian Western civilization. It is a challenge to civilization itself, to the very idea of civilization. What do you mean by that?
I mean that because they love death and destruction, because they are intent on carrying out the Quran's imperative to destroy. The Quran says, go around the world and see what became of the civilizations before you that rejected Allah. Well, that's asking for destruction. It's saying that the Islamic State, for example, they go and they destroy the winged Assyrian horses and they destroy these ancient Roman cities and so on that have existed all this time because they want to show by the ruins of these places, by the rubble, the judgment of Allah. And so this is a quintessential anti-civilizational force, one that loves destruction and death by their own avowal and without any apology or dissimulation at all. And so they are directly arrayed against the whole concept of civilization, of society, of a group of people living together in peace and creating a society in which there is the possible flowering of the human spirit. They are directly opposed to that. And so they are the quintessential anti-life, anti-civilizational force.
Finally, what do they picture for the proper end of human history? What society? How would you describe the society that ISIS imagines?
The eschatological vision of Islam, according to Islamic tradition, is a world in which the non-Muslims, rather, have been killed or converted to Islam, and the whole world is Islamized and lives in peace under Islamic law, with everyone being Muslim at the end of the world.
Robert Spencer is director of Jihad Watch, author of several books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Robert, thank you very much for being our guest.
It's a pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll begin a weekly series with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on Christian apologetics. We'll discuss the hookup culture with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, author of The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. And we'll talk with Ken Samples about a TV show on the History Channel called Ancient Aliens. Thursday on the program, we'll get a biography of the late 6th century, early 7th century mayor, and then later, Bishop of Rome. He's remembered as a pope, Gregory the Great. There are only two of those around. Men who have the honorific great attached. Gregory's one of them. We'll find out why Thursday on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. to talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.